adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rated This Way, a cultural podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo. With us, as always, we have Paolo Noboloni Mangoni.
Acquatura!
Acquagara!
And welcome back, everyone.
We have Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
And we have Julian Padu D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Paulo, I didn't do that on purpose, but it just happened to work
out
where I rushed through it to the perfect time so that you could say that. You could rush it. So you're welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Welcome to the pod, everybody. Wow. What a fun episode we have. So we're going to get through a quick first half of the show. And then we have quite a lengthy interview on the second half of the show. But all very exciting. So again, what we're going to do is get to, first off, let's see here. We have the international break, of course, that we're going to chat about. Then we're going to have kind of a little bit of a transfer market recap, as quick as we can make it. Right, Paulo?
Yes.
And then, yeah, just a preview for, I guess, the upcoming Serie A games, which, of course, Serie A is coming back after the international break, which is finishing this week. And then the second half of the show, again, it's going to be an interview. And we were very fortunate to have from, you might know him from, I guess, TSN 1200. He's the voice of Atletico Ottawa. He also provides, I guess, commentary on the game for the Ottawa Red Blacks as well, CFL franchise. But we have AJ Jakubiak on the latter half of the show, which is very exciting. It was a very fun chat, but again, you'll hear all that. So again, packed show. Quickly, guys, anything you guys want to say before we jump into everything?
Forza Canada?
Forza Canada. Forza Canada. And with that, let's take that. Paulo, run with it. Forza Canada.
Okay, so Forza Canada, then we'll just move into the Italy international break. All right, so it started off on Thursday with Italy, Bulgaria. So again, Florenzi and Acerbi were the main changes from the starting 11 from Wembley. Chiesa opened the scoring in the 16th minute by running from his trademark run from the inside, from the right side into the middle, playing a 1-2 with Immobile before firing home a low left-footed strike. It was a horrendous defensive error from Florenzi that allowed Cagliari-owned striker Despoff to supply Ascoli-owned Ilya for the tap-in to make it 1-1.
Despoffcito?
Yes, exactly. Insigne had a chance at the end of the first half after running onto Benucci through ball, but was denied by the Bulgarian goalkeeper, which would be the main storyline of the game. So Chiesa had a chance for a second goal at the hour mark, but was again stopped by Georgiev, who made 7 saves all game. Immobile had the best chance of the game, but again denied by the Bulgarian goalkeeper. So again, 2 drop points for Italy. Moving on to Sunday's game, which finished 0-0. So just want to list off the main points about that game. Chiellini, Locatelli, Di Lorenzo started. Berardi replaced Chiesa. Started off, it was essentially all Italy. Switzerland had maybe 1 good chance. So Locatelli was outstanding all game and supplied a great through ball for Berardi, who was stopped one-on-one by Jan Sommer in the 19th minute. Again, Locatelli was involved once again to combine with Immobile to set up an Insigne Tira Gir, which just went wide of the far post in the 34th minute. Switzerland's best chance came from a set piece, and the header was just wide of the post. Berardi you know, gained a PK. We'll talk about this after, but gained a PK after Immobile picked up a loose pass from the Swiss defense. Again, it was Immobile's. If Immobile's through ball to Berardi wasn't so shit, perhaps in perhaps we wouldn't have had an Insigne miss. Excuse me, a Jorginho missed PK in the 52nd minute. Locatelli, you know, once again set up and seeing it, but his deflected shot was saved by Sommer in the 73rd minute. So then we have coming up on Wednesday, it's Italy-Lithuania, and Italy's probable formation will be Donnarumma, Calabria, Bonucci, Bastoni, Emerson, Pessina, Cristante, Locatelli, Zaniolo, Raspadori, and Chiesa. All right. Now, the what I wanted for us to discuss. So I'll give my debate points and we'll just pick them off one by one.
Okay.
Okay. So Mancini's decisions of starting Florenzi and Acerbi cost, cost the win against Bulgaria. So by starting Florenzi to Acerbi over Calabria and Bastoni against Bulgaria, he's essentially saying that Bastoni and Calabria are weaker than Acerbi and Florenzi. Because in my opinion, and I think all of you will agree, Bulgaria is a stronger opponent than Lithuania. Discuss.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. I'll go.
I mean, is Bulgaria stronger than Lithuania? Yes. But Switzerland is stronger than Bulgaria. So I feel like other than Donnarumma and maybe Bonucci and Emerson, nobody's really going to start all three games, and maybe Jorginho perhaps. So I, not that I agree with it, with him starting, with Mancini starting Florenzi and Acerbi, but I'm going to guess what he was looking at was trying not to start Calabria and Bastoni, you know, for all three games. So, and again, I think he could have gone about it a different way in different order with who he started and when, but I feel like he was comparing Switzerland to Bulgaria, not so much Lithuania to Bulgaria.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was going to say the same point, that at that point, again, you're thinking of there's a game in 3 days or 2 days, whatever the break was. So the squad between the two of those two, Bulgaria and Switzerland, you're probably going to have a more competitive side against Switzerland.
Of course, which the how the lineup was against Switzerland, you saw that. But to tell me that Acerbi and Florenzi deserve to start against Bulgaria, which, in my opinion, should have started or should start against Lithuania because they're the weaker side.
Yeah.
It was a mistake to not have a right back in on the bench against Bulgaria and had to play Toloi as the right back when Florenzi was just couldn't even move on the field.
Yeah, I would just to that, I would say we got lucky in the Euros when Florenzi got hurt because he would have been there to start, I think, in the first place. He was in the first game. So I just feel like he has, the coach clearly has faith in Florenzi. And that's also why he was it wasn't a question for who was going to start the first game. I think he always knew he was going to start Florenzi. It just went poorly.
Okay. Fair enough. Julian, what do you think?
I mean, it's a tough call because realistically, Bulgaria and Lithuania, I feel like I shouldn't say this, but splitting hairs, those are two teams Italy should beat easily. But yeah, I think obviously hindsight being what it is, it was definitely not the right call.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to the talking point after the Switzerland game. So in this post-match interview, Chiellini stated, and I want to preface that his communication degree came, it was very useful in this post-match interview.
Okay.
So Chiellini stated that after the Switzerland game that they played better in the 0-0 draw on Sunday than in their 3-0 win against Switzerland in the group stage game. So the reason why, and then he added that October is for the Nation League, you know, focus on the Nations League in October. And then in November is the time to think about qualification for Qatar 2020. Again, the reason why I prefaced whatever I said by saying that his communication degree came useful is because it was a great spin on a horrendous result. Because qualification would have been secured with at least closer. I mean, if they would have won against Bulgaria and against Switzerland, qualification would have been secured, not a problem. So qualification would have been secured in September if the results went their way. Then you would have had to focus. Then you could focus freely on Nation League because you secured qualification in September. And then in November, when there's the upcoming World Cup qualifiers again, they could have worked to refine the squad, bringing in players to give them competitive caps and to show the manager what they can do and to be involved further down the line. Again, it was, in my opinion, it's a blown, as very eloquently stated by our friends from Korea Dello Sport, butatavie, which means thrown away. It was thrown away. And now instead of playing games in a very relaxed atmosphere in November, you have to now, you know, play the Nations League in October and then play games in November that actually do matter. Who wants to jump in first?
I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. So first off, just. Again, it might be a silly question, but as the Euro winner, is there an easier way for them to qualify now? Like, I guess winning the Euros doesn't necessarily qualify them?
No, not for the World Cup, no.
Not for World Cup. Okay. Let me think on my other questions. Other guys, go ahead. I need to ruminate.
I agree with what you're saying there, Paulo, with regards to, you know, if Italy took care of business these past 4 or 5 days, that it kind of sets them up for success earlier on in the process. And then it does give Mancini a chance to bring in some different players for the last 2 or 3 games instead of having to stress about it. Because right now Italy's in a position where if they win their next 3 games, and they'll still qualify. But obviously nothing's guaranteed after how these last 2 games went. So I agree with that, in that Italy should have kind of put their, or you would have hoped they would have put their best foot forward to try and secure those 3 points. So disappointing on that end for sure.
Okay. My next question, Nations League qualification from that. Do you qualify for World Cup from Nations League?
Yes. If you win. Yes.
There you go. So, okay. I just think we're being too,
obtuse.
Not up to, well, you're being obtuse as always, but, no, I just think it's a little, doomsday to say everything we're saying. I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, again, like I'm not freaking out over these 2 results. At least they weren't dropped. Like, at least they got 2 points and not 0 points. But again, I hear you, Paulo. I hear you. But it'll be okay.
No, I get, well, again, and I forgot to point out that Italy broke the record.
Yeah, exactly.
Longest unbeaten streak.
So there's positive outcomes from this game. So they're at 36 games unbeaten at this point, which is a new world record, right? I think there's someone is saying it's possible that it's tied at this point or whatever, but it is for all, I think for most of what people are saying, it's agreed that this is the new record.
Yes. So again, I just want to get that off my chest because it felt like it was pure spin, and it was not acknowledging the fact that, you know, it was 2 poor results, which, and against teams that, you know, they should win.
Yeah. Hey. I hear you, Paulo, but it'll be okay.
Anyway, I want to open up to the floor. Anyone wants to jump in?
I am, just because it's nothing. Well, nothing new really, but my Ciro Immobile hate train is started back up again, and I feel bad for him because it looks like he was getting off to a good start with with Lazio and with Sadi being there, and they're obviously not playing a 3-5-2 there. They're playing a version of the 4-3-3. So part of me was hoping that that would translate. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago that, you know, his familiarity with the 4-3-3 at Lazio would hopefully translate a little bit into the 4-3-3 that Mancini uses. But I still don't understand why Mancini goes back to him game after game. At some point, I feel like he has to stop coming up with excuses for his performances, because Italy had chances to score, Immobile included. And for me, I'm just not seeing enough out of him, out of that position. He's had, you know, he had the entire Euros. He's now had these two qualifiers to show it, and I'm just not seeing enough. So whether it's Zaniolo, false nine, whether it's Raspadori, whether it's Belotti, whether it's Scamacca, whoever, for me, Mancini needs to look for his plan B. And again, that's nothing new for me, but these past two games just kind of reiterated or kind of reinforced, sorry, what I've said in the past.
Michael? I have a new set of questions. So what are we looking at realistically? Like you said, it's November or...
It's November, next, yeah.
Right? So
November is the last round of World Cup qualification games.
And they have how many? Two or three?
I think it's going to be three.
I think it's only two remaining here.
Okay, so then it's...
Because they have Lithuania still to play.
Yes.
Yes. So currently, this table for their group is Italy is first place with 11 points. Switzerland have 7 points. Bulgaria have 5 points. And then Northern Ireland 4, Lithuania 0. So, I mean, again, it's, I understand it's not, obviously, it's not, they're not qualified exactly, but I just think that we are getting ahead of ourselves and saying that it's very poor.
No, I understand, you know, where you're coming from, but it was thrown away to borrow a headline.
Who cares?
Yeah,
get over it. Move past it.
No, but I'm just saying, like that. Those like I mentioned, those World Cup qualifiers in November could have been treated as friendly. Exactly, could have been treated as friendly games to try experimental squads. Now, instead of doing that, they're forced to play their best 11 to secure qualification that was thrown away this month.
Yeah, I mean, and again, to your point, it's the Lithuania. I mean, is still to play, but you know. That game, you're going to want to take all points from Bulgaria, who's in third place. You're probably going to want to have taken more points from, but they still have to play Northern Ireland again, who is in second last, and then again they play Switzerland. So, just make up for it. November 12th against Switzerland.
And so on Wednesday, Switzerland plays Northern Ireland. So maybe if Northern Ireland could pick up a result, a useful result, then maybe the conversation changes once again. We'll see. All right. I think, does that conclude our international talk?
If it concludes your debate points, then yes.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Then great chat. So let's move on to, I guess we'll go, right into our transfer market recap. So again, let's try and do this as quickly as we can because we spent a lot of time on that first part. But basically what we want to do here is there's obviously so many things that we can get into, but we're just going to do our top five incoming transfers, our top five outgoing transfers, and we'll just run off a list of honorable mentions for each of those. So
and the top five are in no particular order, right?
No. It's just, again, we've decided these are top five important signings, incoming or important outgoing transfers for just the teams in Serie A, and that's what we determined to be the rule that we were going by.
Nice.
Okay. So who wants to go first for incomings? I guess, Chris, are you going to do outgoings?
Yeah, sure. I can do outgoing. Yeah.
Okay. So Paul already talked a lot. Julian, do you want to do incomings?
Sure. Yeah, I can do incoming.
Okay. Let's go. Let's do it up. So we'll start, I guess, with, Julian there.
So the incoming, okay, so first we have Locatelli to Juve. Then Joaquin Correa to Inter, which I know we had a little bit of discussion on that one off the mic, but I think he'll be the most important one for Inter. Tammy Abraham to Roma, Juan Musso to Atalanta, and Maignan to Milan.
So what's interesting for me so far is that obviously it's important to know where these teams struggled beforehand, or just where obviously there was going to be glaring needs for these teams, because obviously, I mean, Milan didn't struggle, but they obviously lost Donnarumma. So that's why Maignan's there, right? So again, I think the one that speaks to me the most is, I mean, obviously, as a Juventus fan, it's going to be hard for me not to say Locatelli, but it's just, I kind of want to go to Abraham to Roma because I like that move a lot. And I think that he has so much to offer. And I think that I truly, again, maybe I said it was a surprise early in the season, but I think this is going to be a strong Roma side. And I think he's going to play an important part in this on this side.
I definitely agree with that wholeheartedly, because again, that was, in my opinion, Roma's weakness, or one of Roma's weakness last season. I mean, you had an aging Zecco, which a lot of the Roma fans were complaining about. And then you replace him with a player that has tremendous potential. So I definitely agree with your assessment, Michael.
I think on top of that too, it would be hard to argue that Roma didn't have the best mercato, like in general, right? I mean, we're selecting, you know, Abraham as the individual player that's going to make a big impact. But I think in general, Roma did very, very well. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I want to try and disagree with you, Mike, on Abraham being the best one on that list, but it's I can't put together a decent argument for it.
So the only other thing, again, I guess that we, again, Locatelli, obviously we know Juventus' struggles because they need midfielders. They've obviously had a decent attack. They had Ronaldo for 3 years. Their defense probably is also what needs some reinforcements, but they have De Ligt. I think Locatelli obviously is just a shoe-in for, obviously that's going to improve their squad, and that's why it's important. I think, again, Correa to Inter, like Julian said, why do we think we chose that one versus something else?
So I can lead off with this one. So I think he's the biggest, he'll be their most important signing. I think you mentioned Dzeko with Roma. Yes, he's aging. I think he's got a little bit to give, but I don't think you can rely on him game in, game out, 40 games a year. There's also Dumfries as well, but I don't think he'll have, I think he'll be a good signing. I don't think he'll have the huge impact though. To me, Correa, he will just kind of, he'll be that support striker that they need. I wouldn't be surprised if he scores 10 plus goals and finishes with 8 plus assists. It's a player Inzaghi wanted. I think he'll thrive. Now, I know the other player was Çalhanoğlu as well, kind of replacing Eriksen there. Again, I still think it's a good signing, but I think the reason I didn't put him there is because they also still have Sensi in that role. So as Chris has mentioned many, many, many times before, Çalhanoğlu isn't consistent. So if he does run into a few bad games in a row, well, that's fine. There's somebody else who can replace him.
There's someone else who is very inconsistent.
Yes. Not so much inconsistent, more so made of glass. But yes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think those are fair points. And again, just to round it out there, we already talked about Maignan, but Musso to Atalanta. Again, why do we choose Musso?
I'll take with this because Musso is definitely an upgrade over Golini. I mean, maybe he's kind of struggled in the first two games, still getting used to kind of the system, but just objectively, Musso's better.
Okay, then let's. Why don't we go through then, Paulo? Take it away. Do your
my rapid fire listing.
Your rapid fire list of the rest of the incoming transfers that are notable. Honorable mentions.
So Bobega and Pratt to Torino, Zakangi and Basic to Lazio, Zambo and Guisa to Napoli, Simi and Ribery to Salernitana, Caputo to Samp, Catrone and Pinamonte to Empoli, Busio to Venezia, Keane to Juventus, Julian Mensen, Dumfries to Inter, Torreira and Nico Gonzalez to Fiorentina, Dzeko to Inter, Shomer Rudolph to Roma, Arnautovic to Bologna, Lovato to Atalanta, Vigna to Roma, Giroud and Macias to Milan.
Okay, now it would be just unwise to say this, but I'm only going to pick one of us to say one. So, Chris, of that list, who is like who just missed out to make our top five?
Ooh, from that list, that's a good question.
We forgot Demirel on that list as well, but yeah.
Oh yeah, Demirel to Atlanta too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so as you guys know, I'm officially, unofficially, the president of the Lovato fan club.
Yes.
I would pick him. I just think that there's a lot of potential there, and I think at Atalanta he can really grow in that system and kind of really make a name for himself. So I, with my bias and my president of the fan club,
and your heart,
yes, and my heart, I would pick Lovato.
So I was literally looking at Lovato, and that's why I said, Chris, answer. I asked you specifically, and I knew that was the answer.
Beautiful.
Okay, let's move on then. Let's do the, again, top five, not in any specific order, but top five outgoing.
Top five outgoing. So kind of lumped together just because they're from the same club is going to be Romelu Lukaku to Chelsea, of course, and Hakimi to PSG.
So that's a one. That counts as one in our list.
That counts as one. Yes. 0.5 and 0.5. Sorry, Julian.
We cheated a bit there, but yeah.
Yeah. We have Donnarumma, of course, to PSG as well. Next one is Romero to Tottenham, who was the Serie A Defender of the Year last year. We have Rodrigo de Paul to Atletico Madrid, and then Paulo's favorite, Ronaldo, to Manchester United. So that was our top five outgoing transfers.
Oh, what is that? Is he hissing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. I mean, it's obvious why these names are here, but again, let's just go through the motions here, at least of Lukaku and Hakimi. Why were they so important in terms of outgoings?
I mean, Inter's two best players.
Yeah. Julian, do you want
to? Yeah. For Conte's system, I will say yes.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I think replacing 24 goals in the league, Hakimi as well, I think in the right wing back role. I'm not sure how he'll be as a right back, but as a right wing back, I think he's the best in the world right now. Wow. He's only 22. Right. So those are two huge losses.
Okay, fair. Okay, next, Donnarumma to PSG. I'll let Chris take this one.
I mean, the Inzaghi number one, and, you know, we expect to be the Inzaghi number one for the next, you know, 10 to 15 years, maybe. Obviously, a lot of the chatter there is that he, you know, went for free. So
the chatter on this pod specifically.
Yeah, very specifically. And of course, it was kind of a drawn out saga with Donnarumma and Raiola and Maldini and everybody else that was involved there. So I think that's why part of the reasons why we added that to this top five list. Excuse me.
Right. And actually, you know what? Why don't we talk about two Romero to Tottenham?
So, yeah, that's it's tough. I personally really wanted Atalanta to keep him. But I know when, you know, what was it? 40 or 50 million?
Yeah, I'll look
at 50, my way up.
So 50 million total because they had to pay off Juventus.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, when you're a club like Atalanta, who, as we know, don't have the biggest wage bill and the biggest budget, when an offer like that comes in for a player and you have an opportunity for plusvalenza, I think it's hard not to take it. But yeah, losing the Serie A Defender of the Year is obviously very significant. And as we spoke about, you know, just a few minutes ago, they do have Demiral and Lovato coming in to try and replace the minutes that he took up last year.
Right. And he's only 23.
That's right. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
So, it was 42.5 million pounds. Go ahead, Paul.
That's why Chris talked about Romero. That's why I would, and also Lovato, but I would argue
Demiral.
Demiral, exactly, because he was brought in to replace Romero. But yes.
Yeah. Directly replace.
Yeah.
Okay. DePaul to Atletico Madrid is kind of, again, no brainer, but just in general, we know that him staying at Udinese last season was clearly what kept them above the relegation spots. And I mean, there was a lot of chatter last year that he was going to be leaving, right? And there was a lot of court people trying to court him. So it's again, it's a big loss for Udinese. They seem to be managing it so far, I think, right? They're not. Let's see where they've drawn a game and they've won a game, so they're not obviously out of it completely. I think the draw was against Juventus, right, in the first week. So it's it's at least again, we just know how important DePaul was to that team, it'll remain to be seen what happens with Udinese, but I think for sure Atletico Madrid definitely get a great player.
Just to add on to the Udinese talk, they also sold Okaka to a club in Turkey.
Yeah, but he's not part of our. We can talk about that afterwards.
Okay, I'm just saying, it just goes to add to Udinese's trouble to stay above relegation zone.
Okay, yes, and finally. You go, Paulo, I'll let you talk about it. Ronaldo to Man United.
Yeah, well, I was begrudgingly outvoted, but yes. again, the Serie A top goal scorer, et cetera, et cetera. Juventus' best player.
I think he was the best forward last year. Is that what? Yeah. If we're talking about the best defender, we're talking about also the best forward.
Exactly, yes. But again, begrudgingly, I say it because his salary hamstrung the club for the last 3 years. But yes.
So we had just to show how important big these outgoing transfers were. The MVP of last season left, the most important or the best defender left, and the best forward left. That kind of shows it. Why
I guess wasn't Donnarumma also best goal?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. So well, hey. It's a rebirth for Italian soccer after the Euros. So, you know what? They're going to have to just get over it and find some more talent within. Okay, let's do a quick just running. Apollo, again, your list there for the notable outgoings.
Okay, so Hakan Çalhanoğlu from Milan, Tomiyasu from Bologna, Nainggolan from Inter, Janko from Torino, Florenzi from Roma, Pedro from Roma, Hauge from Milan, Golini from Atalanta, Paolo Lopez from Roma, and Jermaine Pezzella from Fiorentina.
Okay, Julian, I'm not put you in the same boat as Chris, but I'm not looking this time at like one specific player, but from that list, who is again who just didn't make it on our list?
From that list, I think, honestly, I think a big loss will be Tomiyasu. I'll actually like to see how he does with Arsenal. But I think he was kind of quietly one of Bologna's best defenders, and that's saying a lot for a team that, what was it, 40 games with conceding a goal?
Something like that.
So I think he will be a big loss for them, and I'm kind of interested to see how he does with Arsenal.
Yeah, definitely an interesting storyline there. Okay, then that rounds off our chat about the transfer market. I guess recap. We didn't play your song, but
I know. Okay, well, and again, we'll save it for January.
There we go. Yeah. We'll bookmark it for January.
Bookmark it for January again. It's Rafaela Carrà's Rumore.
That's right. Okay. Then last thing before the break here is let's just get into, I guess, a preview of the most important games, I guess, or just the most interesting, most important games coming up this weekend after the international break. So, again, on Saturday, Serie A is back up. So who wants to take that, Paulo?
So, of course, we have Napoli-Juventus on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Saturday at, unfortunately, noon. Eastern Standard Time. Don't ask me why, but anyway, at 2:45 Eastern Standard Time is Atalanta Fiorentina. 9:00 on Sunday Eastern Standard Time is Spezia Udinese, and then at noon Standard Time Sunday it's Milan Lazio. So those are the four games that we picked out as games to follow. Chris, why is Betsy Udinese on that list?
Yeah, so for me, and we'll talk about Udinese a bit more after the break, but I can see both Udinese and Spezia fighting for fighting the drop later on in the year. Obviously, this is still early on, but games like this are what can, you know, make or break where you finish at the end of the season. So I'll be curious to see how Udinese looks specifically. Spezia haven't been too special so far under new manager. So yeah, I think this could be a relegation battle towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and just a note to outside of that game, I guess there's no game on the Friday, but there's a game on Monday. So it's Bologna-Verona. So that's just not a game to watch necessarily, but just if you have the ability to watch all the games like we would love to have, there's one on Monday.
So, and again, putting aside my bias for Juventus, and, you know, obviously Napoli-Juventus is the game to watch, but I'm most curious about Milan-Lazio. Like, it's going to be Sarri ball versus Pioli on fire. So, it's going to be entertaining to watch Milan Twitter implode when, like, Sarri just, like, runs riot all over them. But anyway, I'm just looking forward to that.
No comment. Shots
fired, question?
Yeah. No comment.
Chris writing down notes for next week.
Exactly. Oh, good. Okay. I guess that kind of wraps it up then. So, again, we have a fun interview on the second half of the show. So what we'll do here is we'll take a break and we'll get into that interview. So give us 10 seconds. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show. As of course we have a guest on, and we needed to have the most intimidating music possible, so we chose Adriano Celentano Azzurro. So with us today we have the voice of Atletico Ottawa. You would have heard him on TSN 1200. He's also the voice of, I believe, the Ottawa Red Blacks. He's a wrangler of Lee Versage. He's, of course, we're talking about the AJ Jakubek. So hello, AJ. How are you doing today?
Doing awesome, guys. Great to be with you.
Awesome. Okay, so just quickly, I mean, I'm sure you know Celentano. Did it work? Did it, the intimidation method?
Well, he didn't scare me away. So
good. All right. That's, we know we thing. Have one of our own here. Exactly. Have you? Okay. We debated this earlier before we called you, but Celentano has another song where it like sounds like he's speaking English, but it's like gibberish. Have you ever heard of that song before?
I have not. No, that's the first time. Hey, you know what? I'm just open to learning new things, hearing new things, and you know, great way to start the show for sure.
That's right. Okay, great. Okay, Paulo, so write that down. So next time if we have AJ back, right, it's okay to be
noted.
As long as you don't play the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes. So let me tell you, I talked to the guys before and I said, I'm pretty sure AJ hates Chili Peppers. And Chris was like, let's play Chili Peppers. I said, no, we can't do that. Oh, God. Okay,
sure,
anyways.
To scare me away is to That's play it. The Chili's, which is, I mean, you would think, like, I'm a rock guy. I like metal, punk, alternative. I like a lot of different bands. Like, it's funny, you go on Spotify, mm-hmm. and they kind of list all the different bands. Like, they give you a bunch of different collages, I guess, or montages, where, you know, they think you might like them. And it's like all these different bands that I like, and the Chili Peppers thinking, like no, I do not like the Chili's. I do not want to hear the Chili's. Yes, I'll hear Metallica or Mastodon or Caius or, you know, the Ramones. There are all these different bands, Soundgarden, yeah. whatever. But I just, for whatever reason, the Chili Peppers are just nails on a chalkboard for me. So, yeah, as long as you avoid that, pretty much I'm good with anything.
Okay, good. We'll call Spotify, make sure we get some Celentano in there then for you.
Perfect. You know what? I'll add it immediately.
Great. Oh God. Okay. Okay. Just we want to start off nice and easy here. So we want to talk about, obviously, since we're having a Canadian on the show, we need to bring up Canada's women's national team's gold medal. So what, just quickly, I guess, like a summary of what that means, I think, to the country. Like, what do you think? Like, that's such a big deal for us. So again, what do you think that means again for the country as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's huge for the women's program and just soccer in general in this country, and the culmination of, you know, you can go back 25 years in the days of Charmaine Hooper, but the culmination, I grew up in Edmonton, and I actually was living in Edmonton when I think it was the U19s back then. Now it's the U20s, but it was U19s. And that's when Christine Sinclair came onto the scene for Canada, scored a pile of goals in that tournament. Carl Lang was on that team. There were a couple of other Canadian mainstays that were on that team, and they ended up losing in front of 50,000 people in the championship game to the United States. And that kind of started, you know, this wave of where, you know, that was a couple of years after, you know, Brandi Chastain's goal that really put women's soccer on the map, especially in North America and in the United States. And, you know, that kind of started putting Canadian women's soccer on the map and just kind of baby steps along the way. 2012, I think, was a seminal moment, even though they didn't win.
Oh, yeah.
The controversy and how, you know, they captured the hearts of so many Canadians. And I think to the point where, you know, over the course of the last decade, you know, a lot of these names are household names, you know, players that have now retired, the Diana Mathesons of the world, to, you know, obviously Christine Sinclair. But, you know, now you look at that team and they're household names in this country, whether it's, you know, Vanessa Gilles from Ottawa, Janine Becky, Steph Labbé, Julia Grosso. You can mm-hmm. go on and on and on and on and on. And they have inspired so many women across this country, but I think they've inspired so many people across this country. So, you know, when you think about the fact that, you know, women's soccer has really been around from a competitive standpoint internationally for about 30 years. And now Canada's in a group of five. It's the United States, it's Germany, it's Norway, it's Japan, and it's Canada who have won a major event. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just incredible. And especially now that you're starting to see, you know, countries that maybe were good on the men's side taking women's soccer seriously. England, Argentina, Spain, you go on and on. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, even myself, I was kind of wondering, okay, is this a one-off? What's going to happen when Christine Sinclair
right, exactly.
is done? And to kind of carry on and now win medals in three straight Olympics goes to show that this program's in great hands. I mean, she's led the way and she's always going to be, you know, I don't want to say the pioneer because I kind of feel like Charmaine Hooper is the pioneer mm-hmm. for Canadian women's soccer. But, you know, she's been the standard bearer
exactly.
in this country. And I think we're in great hands beyond this. So, yeah, fantastic what they've done. You know, it's an amazing achievement and you know, there are just so many different, women and people in this country that have been inspired by them. It's only going to help Canadian soccer in the long run. And we're going to see, you know, the next, you know, it was like Julia Grosso, who would have been what, 12 years old or whatever, maybe 10 years old when she would have watched Christine Sinclair and that group back in 2012. Well, how many,
right.
8 to 10 year olds would have been inspired and decided, you know what? Yeah, maybe I've been playing soccer, but now I really want to take it seriously. I think that's fantastic for the sport.
Yeah, and now I want to beat the United States is specifically what you're saying, right? I want to come back yeah. and make sure that we're kicking butt next time. Oh man, just yeah, you brought that up, the 2012, and like that's we've talked about it on the show too. But just Julie, what did you say? You've never seen that
the 6 second. Rule called ever in any other soccer game I've played in or watched.
Yeah, ever not before called. Or since, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't either.
Yeah. Oh God. Okay. Well, let's pivot then. While we're talking national team, so Paula, do you want to just talk about the men's team
Yeah, so as you know, you've probably been watching the games as well. Canada played Honduras and then played the United States as well. So I just want to get your take on how Canada set up in the octagon for 2022 World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, I'm dialed in. I'm all in on this. I plan on going to as many games as possible and certainly watching as many as possible. I was at the opener in Toronto at BMO Field for Honduras. And, you know, unfortunately, in 2015 and 16, kind of the last time, you know, Canada was in World Cup qualifying at the second last stage, you know, all their games were out west. All their home games were out west because I think they were doing renovations to BMO Field at that time. So this is my first World Cup qualifying game live since actually they played Honduras in the game that would have meant the other game was moot because had they beat Honduras at home and ended up 0-0, that last game in San Pedro Sula wouldn't have mattered. They would have been already through, but of course we know what happened after that. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I still think, you know, I'm a fan of a lot of different sports, hockey, basketball, football as well, that are kind of right all on the same plane as soccer for me. And that might be one of the most traumatic, if not the most traumatic sporting events that I've ever witnessed, that 8-1 debacle. And to think that, you know, they went 11 games after that and they scored one goal. They scored one goal, and it's not just the 8-1, which, you know, is
horrific.
It doesn't get any worse than that in soccer, right? But the fact that they went 990 minutes right after that and scored one goal, I think, you know, goes to show just how far this program has come. It was, you know, it was a laughingstock, quite frankly. And and it stinks for the guys that were kind of carrying the torch on the men's side, the Julian DeGuzmans and the Atiba Hutchinsons. I mean, these are fantastic players. But, you know, it just was in a real bad place. And here we are less than a decade later, and, you know, we've got our golden generation. It's so exciting. I think it's exciting for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think Canada's got a legitimate chance to qualify for a World Cup, which hasn't happened since 1986. I remember going home and watching on tape delay those games in 1986, going home from school and, you know, putting in the VHS tape and watching Canada against France. And, you know, they didn't have a chance. I mean, they ended up going there, but, you know, they didn't have a chance. They couldn't score a goal. You know, it was a great achievement for those teams, but they're nowhere near at the level we're seeing right now, where we have world-class talent. You know, yeah. Alphonso Davies is the best player in CONCACAF. There's not even
easily.
You can't even think of who's number two. Maybe it's
Jonathan David. Sick.
Maybe it's Irving Lozano. You know, like maybe it's Jonathan David. It's one of those guys. Maybe it's Reyna. Maybe it's McKenney. You know, there's a lot of great players on the Mexican team, even Leon Bailey in Jamaica. You can throw a lot of people in there in the discussion for number two, but Alphonso Davies is without a doubt the best player in CONCACAF and, you know, a top 25 player in the world. You know, you look at, you know, Jonathan David and Tejon Buchanan and Stephane Oustakiou, and, you know, this is a golden generation. So, you know, that not only is it exciting that we've got a chance to qualify for a World Cup, and I do think Canada, you know, if they can take care of business against El Salvador, they'll be in real good shape, you know, as long as they continue to win the games that they should going forward. But I truly believe they're closer to Mexico and the United States right now than they are the rest of CONCACAF. So you still have to go out and get results. We saw that with the U.S. in 2018. I mean, they didn't win a road game and they didn't end up qualifying. So it's not going to be easy going to, you know, a lot of these Latin American countries where, you know, you deal with hostile environments. But it's exciting times because of that reason. But I think mainly because of the fact when you watch this team play, they're exciting. They can go toe-to-toe with anyone in CONCACAF and you know, they're going to score some goals. And, you know, they've got a chance to win. Like, I'm not concerned when, you know, Mexico comes to Canada. Do I think it's going to be easy? No, I don't. I mean, we saw against Honduras. There's not going to be one game in qualifying, home or away, that's going to be easy. But I'm not concerned if all of a sudden, you know, you need to get a result against Mexico to kind of keep the train rolling. Maybe you need a win. I think we can get a win. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, before, you know, you would think, oh, Mexico's here. Well, hopefully, maybe we can snuff out a nil-nil draw. Well, no, that's not the way it is. So this team is exciting, and this team has the potential to be really, really good. And let's just see where this goes because, you know, I think this is, you know, when you look at what the women have done and when you look at where the men are at right now, this is just such an exciting time for soccer in this country. And then you look at the professional game where we've got 11 teams and that's only going to grow. You look at the World Cup coming here in 2026. I mean, the next decade, I don't even think we're going to recognize, mm-hmm. you know, where we've been in soccer once we get to 2030, you know, after the World Cup and see the interest in soccer in this country. You look at the Euros and the numbers that they did on TSN. I mean, imagine that if Canada's in a World Cup in Qatar. I mean, those numbers are going to be off the charts, and that's going to mean more kids are going to want to play, and it's going to mean, you know, maybe even a better golden generation going forward, you know, when you talk about the development of Canadian players. So exciting times for sure for Canadian soccer, and you know, it's been a long time coming for the men's program, but it really feels like it's in a good spot here right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, again, that's a really good point. It's so exciting to just think about that prospect because, again, we've all grown up and we've played. And, you know, there's obviously there was a big disconnect between what we saw as truly, truly competitive soccer in this country versus what we're watching, you know, what we were watching for years in Europe or anywhere else. So it is really exciting to see that development and see things like, you know, I guess even the CPL, for that example, is having somewhere where domestically you can go and play on a broader scale is also truly exciting. So actually here, Julian, quickly, you have a CPL question.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know, what's your opinion on Atletico Ottawa and the CPL, kind of how it's going to compare to the Fury and when they were in the NASL and the USL?
Yeah, it's a great question. I know I've been really impressed with the caliber of play. When you look at player salaries across the league, you know, they have to be cautious at this stage. I get that. Because you want to ensure that the long-term survival of this league. So, you know, player salaries are lower than what they were, you know, for the Fury days. And mm-hmm. when you look at just the results of how this league is done in the Canadian Championship, in the CONCACAF League, where, you know, Forge FC have had a couple of decent runs and, you know, they're close to qualifying for the CONCACAF Champions League. But, you know, you look at Mark DeSantos, right? And, you know, this is a guy that I think the world of, and he did, you know, fantastic things with the Ottawa Fury in that run in 2015, leading them to the NASL Soccer Bowl, where they eventually lost 3-2 to the New York Cosmos. You know, and then, you know, he was in the league championship the next year in USL. He won the league championship the following year in NASL with San Francisco. So he's won mm-hmm. everywhere he's gone. You know, he had his struggles with Vancouver, but, you know, that's a team that they're, what, unbeaten in double-digit games now? And only two of those were after the firing in the league, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason he's gone is you know, the loss to Pacific. They lost in 2019 to Cavalry, and they lost in 2021 to Pacific. And, you know, York United took the impact in 2019 to penalties. And I'm curious to see how this next round of games is going to go against MLS competition. And look, there's no doubt that, you know, Major League Soccer is better. But, you know, this is a league that I think is punching above its weight right now in terms of the caliber of play. And the reason why is because you've got Canadian players that otherwise wouldn't get an opportunity to play mm-hmm. that are giving it a go. And I look at the national team and I look at, you know, the fact that you have players like Daniil Henry and Maxim Crapo that both spent time with Ottawa Fury. You know, Henry's time was short here, a month, but, you know, Crapo was here for a year and he was USL Goalkeeper of the Year. Another guy who played in USL, albeit not in Canada, is Marc-Anthony Kay. I mean, you need that that stepping stone. You can't just have MLS is a good league. It's not a top five league in the world or anything. And that kind of step to become a top five league is going to be a big one for sure. Mm-hmm. When you look at, you know, the caliber of player that you see in England, Germany, Italy, France, and Spain. But, you know, you look at where it's at, it's a top 15 league in the world. It's in the mix with Liga MX and Argentina and Brazil and, you know, the Turkish league and some of those other, you know, Belgium and Russia kind of next tier level leagues in Europe. And so like, it's a really good league, which means you need that stepping stone to get into that league. Just like, you know, all the different leagues in Europe have lower divisions. You know, we mm-hmm. need that for our players as well. And you can get that in USL, but now that there's no Canadian teams, there's no Canadian import rule. I mean, you're an import like everybody else. Whereas you were a domestic player before when the Fury were in that league. So now we've got a league where, you know, there's domestic players that get an opportunity to play on eight Canadian teams. You'd think it's only going to grow. And that's important because, you know, there's so many different players that otherwise would be packing it in and moving on to something else at 20, 21, 22 years old. And now they've got an opportunity to play professionally. And, you know, these are players that we're going to see make the jump to MLS. And these are players that we're going to see make the jump, you know, to the national team as well. So it's important mm-hmm. to kind of fill in so that, you know, the days of, not that you won't see players try Europe in the lower leagues as well, but it's nice that, you know, if you're a Canadian player and you're not good enough, say for MLS or any of the big leagues in Europe, you don't have to just ply your trade in the third division in Sweden or, you know, something right. like that. So I think it's huge for Canadian soccer. And you know, I think it's great that Ottawa, you know, has had a team. When the Fury left, I thought it's going to be a few years before, you know, Ottawa gets a professional soccer team. And, you know, I talked to one investor that has invested quite a bit of money in soccer in this country. And I asked him, what do you think? You know, he's not an Ottawa guy, but he thought Ottawa was a bit of a poison market at that point because of, you know, how everything went down with the Fury and yeah. the fact that, you know, we were able to get a team so quickly and have Atletico Madrid as part of it. I think is massive for this city. And I feel like this is going to be a staple in Ottawa for years to come.
For sure. And again, Apollo was laughing at poison market. Just because I think he like, we're thinking about, you know, the, you know, how many sports franchises, I mean, just for us, well, we've been growing up too, right? How many have come and gone, but like you said, like having someone like Atletico Madrid, like that's, it's such a weird concept, but again, it's incredibly, again, exciting is I guess the word of the day here, but it's so different than what it was like, you know, 10 years ago, even. So I guess just quickly, what were your thoughts on, again, having Atletico Madrid and I guess just invest or think that, you know, the CPL is somewhere that they want to, you know, grow, again, even their brand, I guess, but in general, just that they want to help grow our game as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, the fact that they picked Canada and the fact that they picked Ottawa is, you know, fantastic for Canadian soccer and, again, soccer in this city. So, you know, this is a club that, it's a, you know, by any measure, and if you measure them just by soccer, like just play on the pitch, mm-hmm. you know, they're a top 10 club in the world. But by any measure, financially, whatever you want to say, you know, you look at the rich list, you look at, you know, just any different measure that a lot of people judge, you know, the overall health of a club, you know, they are top 15 in the world. So. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the third highest profile club in La Liga, which for a long time was the best league in the world. I think the Premier League has probably overtaken them the last two or three years when you look at results on the pitch finally, and certainly when you look at finances. And I think that's probably a big reason why the Super League, you know, especially, you know, from the Real Madrids and the Barcelonas and the Juventuses of the world, were, I think that's a big reason why they were looking at that model, because it feels like the gap's widening a little bit between England and the rest of, you know, the big European leagues. That's a different story altogether.
But
I mean, Atletico was part of that group, right? And you know, the fact that they were included in that group just goes to show, like 20 years ago, they wouldn't have been part of that group, as much as they've had a great tradition and terrific fan base and everything like that. But now they're part of that group. And so it's fantastic. You know, they've had success in other markets. You know, when they had a team in India, they won the league numerous times. You look at Atletico San Luis in Mexico, and, you know, they got promoted in their first year, I believe, to Liga MX, and they've been a mid-table side in a very good league in the world, again, like MLS, the top 15 league in the world. And so they've had success everywhere. That being said, I mean, North American soccer, and I know Mexico's, you know, part of North America, but, you know, when you look at soccer in Canada and the United States, it's a different animal altogether. And I think they're learning that right now, just given some of the struggles that they've experienced. And look, they're going to figure it out. They got, you know, smart people involved. You know, I'm a big fan of Fernando Lopez and what he brings to the table and how passionate he is about this community. So I think they're going to do well eventually. It's a little slower than I think they would like for sure to start, but you know, they're learning about things. And, you know, I think there's some mistakes that they made here going into year two, but that you would hope that, you know, they might have avoided, at least in terms of the on-field product. But in the end, they'll get this right. When you've got a team that's winning La Liga and is punching above their weight to do it, yeah, they're a top 15 club in the world, but, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid are superpowers. And you know, whenever an Atletico Madrid can win the league ahead of those two, as they did last year, you know, they're punching above their weight. So eventually they're going to be doing that here. They'll get it right here. And you know, this is a team that I think in due time, and hopefully sooner rather than later, is competing for championships in Canada as well.
Yeah. Yeah. To your point, I just pulled up the football team ranking. So Atletico Madrid, 7th in on that list. I mean, obviously Madrid is first, Barcelona, you have those people above you, but Madrid 7th. That's again, just having that on your side is just an incredible, I think, it's fortunate for sure, but it's also just a massive insurance policy for yourself, right? You have that behind you to kind of make sure that you're pushing, which is great. And you know who's 8? Ottawa, Atletico Ottawa. No, I'm just joking.
One day, right? One
yeah,
day.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Dare to dream.
Okay, let's pivot here a little bit. And I guess, Chris, what do you want to talk a little bit about Nations League in general?
I do, yeah. So more specifically, UEFA Nations League, just kind of general thoughts on the tournaments so far. And then, as we know, you know, there's been 2 or 3 match days in the European leagues, and then we have this international break. So, yeah, general thoughts on the Nations League, the setup of that. And then are you a fan of having an international break this early into the season, or do you not mind having international games break up the club schedule so early on?
Yeah, I think international soccer needs a revamp. I think everyone knows that. This is kind of a bit of a one-off in terms of, at least we hope, right? COVID. I mean, you look at 5 different windows and 14 games that, you know, and it's not like UEFA's got a whole whack of games to play. You know, South America's got a whole whack of games to play. So, you know, it's insane the amount of games that these players are going to play over the course of the next year. You think of, you know, an Alphonso Davies or even a Jonathan David, right? I mean, they're playing 38 league games. And, you know, he's probably going to play in the majority of these 14 games for Canada. Then you got cup matches. Then you've got Europe. So at some point, something has to give. And I think, you know, it's a little too much in terms of how taxing it is on the players. To me, the Nations League is just another. We don't need more events that confuse people. I think we need less. I'm not saying we need less soccer. You know, I would get rid of, you know, if I was kind of the president of all soccer and had, you know, basically powers that superseded FIFA and the FAs and everything like that, the clubs. In a perfect world, I would get rid of kind of secondary cup events in countries like the League Cup in England. You know what? Just have your continental football, if you're good enough to make it there, your cup football. You know, I think it's important. The traditions of cup football are very important. And then the league. And then when it comes to international soccer, I mean, events like the Nations League, I get it's better than a friendly, but just because it's better than a friendly doesn't mean it's just a newer competition that really doesn't mean anything other than, you know, boosting your rankings a little bit and stuff. So what I would like to see is, you know, going forward and reducing the amount of windows for sure. Again, you know, in a year like this, there's not much you can do about it because you have so many qualifiers to fit in because of COVID. But, you know, I kind of devised the formula where the other thing I'd like to see is I'd like to see a World Cup every 2 years. I think no one's going to say when the World Cup comes around every second year that, oh, geez, I can't believe this World Cup is here. I really wish it was 2 years later. No, everyone's going to be excited about it.
Sweet.
That's the premier event that people want to watch. So
yeah.
What I'd like to see is just everything streamlined a little bit and not more games per se, less games. Eliminate friendlies altogether, but basically have a system where, okay, you have a Euro every 2 years or Copa America, Gold Cup, whatever, and that is part qualifier for the World Cup that goes the following year. So basically, you know, you'll have a two-year window where, okay, everyone's qualifying to get into their various Euro, Copa America, whatever. I mean, obviously, Copa America, everyone gets there, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Then you have your tournament. So let's say it was 2025 and you're getting ready for the 2026 World Cup. So basically in 2025, everyone's qualifying for their various events. They go and play those events. You know, let's say you have half your field that is there. You know, let's say it's top eight in Europe. All right. You reach the quarterfinals of the Euros. You guys are all going to the World Cup. Everyone else is playing off over the course of the next few months in kind of a repechage event to see who gets the other spots. And while they're playing in those events, if you didn't reach the Euros, for example, the Faroe Islands and, you know, the Kosovos of the world can start playing games there. So they weed, you know, the smaller nations out. And then the bigger nations, you know, the Nations League is all about having kind of squads play other squads, other countries at their level. So all of a sudden the top eight go through to the World Cup in 2026 through Euros. Well, they'll play each other in kind of their own Nations League because while everyone else is playing off in this repechage to see who the remaining spots go in the World Cup, those sides play each other for seeding in their own kind of quote-unquote Nations League. Like, that's the kind of format I think we need. We need it, you know, streamlined a little. We need less qualifiers and more big tournaments. That's going to lead to more money. You know, these big tournaments are cash cows. It's going to lead to more money, which leads to, you know, unfortunately, more grease into the palms for FIFA and some of the cronies involved at the highest level. But in the end, it's also going to lead to more money and more investment and development at the grassroots level in the game all across the world as well. So I don't see a downside to it. I've kind of thrown that at a number of different people. And, if all of a sudden you're playing a World Cup every second year, but you're adding windows and you're adding friendlies and, you know, that's not going to work for anyone because you're taxing the players. But if you, you know, eliminate, for example, the March window and okay, guess what? There's no March. Like, the March window is the one that drives me up the wall because a lot of times it's friendlies and you're right in the middle of, you know, your club season where, you know, there's races and everyone's excited about
most important part of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The fun part of the season for sure. And all of a sudden, you know, you break for a week and a half and it's nothing games because you already know the field for the World Cup or the Euros or whatever. And okay, well, let's go play some friendlies for a week and a half and in the middle of, you know, a title race in Serie A or beyond. So it's, that's there's a lot that can be done to improve the game. And I think, again, more international soccer, like have a Women's World Cup every second year and a Men's World Cup every second year. And then they've got a major event on every the senior year. Side every year. And, you know, I think everyone would be happy. I had more quality international football is only going to lead to grow the game, because that's what gets people into soccer. I mean, the club game, yes, it's really important, and that's the meat and potatoes of it, and that's where you watch your soccer week in, week out. But in terms of the people that are going to be attracted to the sport around the world, it's these big tournaments. I mean, it's bigger than the Olympics. It's bigger than the Super Bowl. It's bigger than the Champions League. It's bigger than anything sporting-wise in the world, where you get over 4 billion people mm-hmm. that are watching it. So why not cash in on that and kind of streamline things? And, you know, the less kind of Nations League type events that we have and friendlies, you know, the better. And, the more quality high-end competition we have is going to be better for everyone as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're pushing the right buttons, right? Saying it's going to be all about the money at the end of the day, right? There's for sure going to be people who are like, oh, well, we don't want to get rid of these games because, you know, well, even the club teams, right? If they're having them at their stadiums, that's money in their pocket for hosting a game, right? So it's just so much. It's so complex to think about because of that aspect. And it's unfortunate because you're right, that the quality or just the importance of these games doesn't necessarily add up when you're playing, like you said, in a March, you're playing a friendly in March when, you know, the fans specifically are not really that interested in that. They want to see, again, they want to make sure that their players, if, you know, you have players going on international duty, that they're not getting hurt, that they're able to, you know, your squads are able to be the most complete 11 that you want them to be, right? But yeah, I mean, that's a, like you said, that's a whole other animal that, you know, we have to, one day we'll get AJ as the head of FIFA or whatever, yeah. whatever it is. And I mean, as much as your pockets may be lined at that point by other, we're hopeful that you'll have a space for us somewhere in the fold to make sure that we're
always.
Yeah.
Good as point. Long as you don't play the Chili's always.
That's it. Yeah. No, we'll turn it off when you come to the office. Okay, guys, do you have any other, I guess, just, I have one just throwaway question, but do you guys have anything else you want to ask?
Since we're, you know, we mostly discuss Serie A on the show, I just wanted to get your idea on how, you know, how we can grow Serie A on the local level and, you know, and beyond that on the national level, because, you know, it's, Canada is mostly a country dominated by the English Premier League.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, if I was Serie A, I mean, I'd be looking to capitalize on the fact that, you know, a lot of soccer fans in this country are of, you know, an Italian heritage. And, you know, there's a lot of fans that seemingly, I mean, only cheer for Italy when, you know, World Cup or a Euro comes around, and then mm-hmm. they kind of forget about it, you know, the next couple of years. And so to capitalize that on that, and, you know, a lot of these players that they cheer for in these major tournaments go back and play in Serie A, the bulk of them, right? So how do you do that? How do you capitalize on that? I mean, it's a great question. If I was a marketing genius, I would have figured that out already, but I'm not. but somehow there has to be a way to kind of capitalize that through the Italian community. I mean,
yeah,
you know, for me personally, like I watch a lot of, and like I'm Polish, Swedish, Norwegian, and Ukrainian, and, you know, I follow all those leagues, mm-hmm. you know, for some crazy reason. Now, I've been to games in all four of those leagues as well, so that's part of it, and I've kind of, you know, got a handful of teams that I really like in those leagues as well. But I think to find a way to, you know, whether it's through, you know, some of the Italian cultural groups here, to find a way to kind of get Serie A to the level. And I don't know if it's ever going to get to that level, right? Again, when you wrap something in the flag, it's easy to get excited about anything. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not a big tennis fan, for example, and I was watching a lot of tennis on the weekend, watching Leila Fernandez, watching
Auger-Aliassime.
Felix Auger-Aliassime, just because, you know, I want to see Canadians do well. So,
right.
I think if you can sell that, hey, you know what, Locatelli's playing here, like that's where, you know, and I don't know how you do that in today's day and age where everything's so fragmented, but, you know, like there's opportunities to do that for sure. And try and promote it because, yeah, it's if you're interested in watching them play once every 4 years or once every 2 years in a major tournament, I would think that you'd be interested in watching them as well on a weekly basis just to see how they're doing with their club teams. But for whatever reason, there's still a bit of a disconnect between, you know, the fans that only tune into the major tournaments and the ones that tune in weekly.
Yeah. Sorry. I'd argue too that probably, or part of the issue probably stems from the fact that you don't really have, a national, or someone carrying those games, you know, pretty readily available to people. Right. Cause we have, for example, City Az on Fubo TV, which is great if they're going to carry all the games, but they at the current state of Fubo TV, cause they just signed up this year. They're only carrying 5 of 10 games every weekend. So it's not even like you can watch your, you know, Sassuolo or Atalanta play every weekend because you're not guaranteed that. Whereas on DAZN, obviously in previous seasons, it has been there. And I think DAZN probably helped a lot to grow that games to what it, I guess, where it is now, specifically over the last kind of 5 years, 3 or 4 years, whatever. But beyond that, I think, in my opinion, you probably have to have that. You have to have somewhere where these people can watch these games and get excited about it, because without that, you're going to be, you know, you're going to have to follow on the internet, really, because there's really nowhere else for you to sit and watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we see now, I mean, content is so important, and I think soccer is, you know, continues to grow in this country. And I think as long as it continues to grow in this country, there's going to be more people that want to watch it and more leagues that, you know, people want to watch. And, you know, you look at the fact that TSN this year picked up La Liga, I think is a good sign. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we're kind of in an area where, you know, there's cord cutters, but we're not there yet. I mean, you look at the NFL and, you know, they just signed an 11-year deal worth billions and billions of dollars. And it goes to show that while, you know, you still, You have to be aware of, you know, streaming and just the digital influence and kind of where we're going. But also, I always kind of say have 1 foot in the future and 1 foot in the present. You don't want 2 feet in the future, because if you have 2 feet in the future and you ignore kind of the platforms that have been staples, you know, television, for example, when it comes to sports, you're going to miss an entire audience of people, right? And maybe that audience is a little bit older, but you're still going to miss, you know, a lot of people in this country. So you can't just, I don't think you can just rely on digital and say this is how we're going to grow things. I think you still need those old school platforms like television, and from that perspective, to get on a main network along with, you know, having different options from a streaming capability. Like if all of a sudden they got some sort of deal with TSN where, okay, well, we're going to show 2 games a week on TSN, but the other 8 are all on your streaming platform. Like that's, I think, where you want to go going forward, because then you have the might of, you know, the entire network, and you still have that, those games, those big games where the casual fan can tune in and okay, well, it's Saturday, I'm going to be able to watch Inter Milan against Napoli, this is good. But if you are, you know, a fan of, you know, a Sampdoria, for example, and you want to see them play every week, well, that option is still available to you, you know, through a streaming capability. Exactly. Right, so like I think you need both. and I think that's where leagues have to be thinking going forward. And no one monetizes, you know, while soccer is the biggest sport on the planet, and it's not even close, and the World Cup is the biggest cash cow, least in terms of a single event on the planet, no league monetizes as well as the National Football League. And, you know, that you can look at any rich list of the top 50 clubs in the world, and you'll see a bunch of soccer teams on there. You'll see, you know, the Yankees and the Lakers and you know, other baseball and basketball teams on there. But the list is half NFL teams. I mean, the Bengals will be on a top 50 list. And, you know, it's not because people love the Bengals. It's because they they monetize things like no other league. And the fact that, you know, they just signed an 11-year deal worth billions with television networks goes to show that, there are people cutting the cord, and more people will continue to do so. But that's still king when it comes to what you need. And so that kind of one foot in the present, one foot in the future type mentality is, I think, what leagues need to do to try and, you know, make the best in terms of bang for their buck.
Yeah, that's for, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that's, again, we got to get either you, myself, Chris, somewhere making important decisions for important broadcasters, et cetera, just to make sure that, you know, the heads are on straight.
I just have one. I just have that World Cup international thing. Everything else is left to you guys.
So. That's it. Okay. Yeah, fair. Hey, well, listen, that's a whole wing. Exactly.
And then I'll let you guys handle the rest.
That's it. Hey, and that's, you know, I think that's worthy of a corner office, just FYI.
we'll send the paperwork over. We'll finalize it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, deal. Quickly, before we let you go here, so I know, do you have currently in Serie A, do you have a team that you sympathize for?
I love watching Atalanta. I just love watching entertaining football. And,
yeah, for sure.
I talked about it earlier with Canada, and, you know, Atalanta for a couple of years has been a side that I've just really enjoyed watching, so... Yeah, they attack and you look at, I love the fact and you see this with, you know, when Ajax went on their run a couple of years ago in the Champions League, I love the fact that you're starting to see clubs that maybe don't have the financial might that a Manchester City or a PSG or a Real Madrid or a Barcelona have, that, you know, when they go into the Champions League and they go and play the big clubs, they attack. They're not thinking, you know, we're going to put 10 men behind the ball and grind out a draw here. No, like that's why I love watching Atalanta. I mean, there's, I've always kind of liked, I visited Italy in 1990, and, you know, that was kind of the era where Serie A was the dominant league on the planet, and the best players, you know, a lot of players were playing domestically back then. You don't see, you know, the amount of kind of foreign talent all over the league, and I think the Bosman rule had a lot to do with that, and just the changing of football in general. But I've always kind of liked Inter Milan, just going back those days. I got an Inter Milan jersey when I was over there in 1990, and I was 14 years old, so I always kind of followed them. But yes, like the San Siro is a place that I need to see a game. I've got a bucket list of 12 kind of that are must see events, and you know, I've been fortunate through hockey, basketball, and football to have, you know, gone to Stanley Cup finals and Super Bowls and Grey Cups and Rose Bowls and Final Fours and the like. And so, like, 9 or 10 of the 12 are soccer related, but the San Siro is definitely on that list and real high on that list of things for me to see. But and you know, beyond Inter Milan and just loving watching Atalanta, I've always liked Napoli as well. And I think it's just kind of that, you know, just watching all the different documentaries and, you know, following the career. I mean, you know, when I grew up watching soccer, I talked about 1986, and I didn't like Argentina and I didn't like Diego Maradona, but, you know, the guy was just, is probably, I know there's all these debates, Messi, Ronaldo in terms of best player. And I think in terms of their careers, you know, their careers and Pelé's career. I mean, 3 World Cups for Pelé, and you know, you look at what Ronaldo and Messi have
done. All the golden boots or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's unrivaled, but I don't think there's a player that at the peak of his powers was as dominant as Diego Maradona was, you know, around that 86, 87, when he led Napoli to Serie A and when led Argentina to a World Cup. I don't think anyone's star ever shone brighter in a shorter period of time. And, you know, maybe it could have shone brighter for a longer period of time, if not for the off-pitch stuff. But, yeah, I've watched a lot of different documentaries about his time in Napoli in particular. And, yeah, there's kind of a little bit of a soft spot for Napoli. So, yeah, for me, bucket list trip to Italy would include Atalanta game, San Siro game, certainly a trip to Napoli to see them play, and probably a game at the Stadio Olimpico as well. Sorry to half of this panel, it does not include a trip to Italy.
Well, we're okay with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, AJ, like, could I interest you, perhaps, in a team that's currently 12th on the table?
You know, as one who has visited the San Siro and who has visited the San Paolo in Naples.
It's the Stadio Diego Maradona.
Sorry, yes, you're right. Yeah. But when I was there, it was the Stadio San Paolo. But yes, it's the Stadio Maradona now. But as someone who has been to both stadiums and has seen games there, you'll definitely enjoy it, especially for me. The atmosphere in Naples at a game, it was unbelievable. Just I was there, Napoli Liverpool, and it was something. Just you can feel the energy beating off your chest. It was something incredible.
Was that the game? Was that 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
And I remember watching that game, and of course Napoli ended up falling in the last day, right? Because of that Allison save, and they ended up winning the tournament that year. But I do remember the game in Napoli. I think it was 1-0 Napoli. And I mean, the atmosphere there, just, it comes across on television, right? There's certain places where it definitely comes across just better on television, you know, especially like leagues like Turkey and Greece and Serbia. I don't know what it is about Southeastern Europe, but those are all bucket list places for me as well. But in Italy, certainly, you know, Napoli is when it comes through loud and clear on television for sure. And especially in Europe and no doubt. I appreciate the recommendation because from what I understand, isn't Napoli the home of my favorite Italian dish as well? Linguine and clams. So
a lot of different things, and pizza.
Well, I guess. Yeah. Neapolitan pizza.
Yeah,
well,
baby. Right? Yeah. Okay, guys. Anything else that you guys you want to shoot at AJ?
I think we covered quite a bit. I mean, I feel like we could go on for another 2.
That's it.
Hours.
I know. That's it. Exactly. So let's get ready. Yeah. Buckle your seatbelts. Let's go. Hour 2. Yeah. No, I think that's, again, that's thanks. We got through a lot there, and we'll have to. Hey, if you want to come back, you're always welcome to come back. If there's any sort of agenda you want to push on this way, you're always welcome to. Maybe some slander on Juventus. Hey, we'll accept it. It's fine. We'll just have a veto vote here.
Happy to come back anytime, guys.
For sure. Again, thanks for coming on. Is anything you want to plug before you go?
No, I guess just excited about, you know, these upcoming national team games. Excited about, you know, calling more Atletico Ottawa games on TSN 1200 so you can continue to follow those games with us. And beyond that, just, pumped for what should be, I'm hoping, is going to be a real exciting, 15, 16 months of soccer leading up to Qatar in November, December of next year, and hoping that Canada can be there, because I feel like if they, you know, I've always kind of disliked the fact that they got this World Cup for, you know, human rights and migrant workers reasons, but if Canada ends up going, just imagine, you know, going to a World Cup where you could potentially go to multiple games in one day because the stadiums are all like 20 minutes apart. So yeah, there's going to be an unsavory side to that, especially knowing that, you know, kind of how those stadiums were built. But
yeah.
If Canada gets there, you know, kind of turn the other way, unfortunately, and get excited about the fact that this will be their first World Cup and almost 40 years, and a World Cup where you actually expect them to score a goal as well.
Yeah, the country's ready for that, for sure. Okay, well, again, thank you to AJ Jakubek. We will take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more of Rete This Way. But again, thanks again, and we'll be for sure we'll have you back sometime soon.
Awesome.
All right, we're back. Wow, great interview. Let's go. Yeah, just a fun, again, thanks to AJ, obviously, for coming on. Okay, I guess we just want to round out the show here. So, Paulo, do you have any, I guess, do you have a Serie B minute or something of the like?
Okay, so Serie B minute, we'll wait until after international break when results actually do roll in. Okay. But I do want to mention, since we're all Pescara fans, they beat Carrarese 2-1, and they're topping their City Lega Pro group.
Excellent.
Hey.
Forza.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Okay. Then, great. That's less than a minute. So thank you for that, Paulo. It was a City of Chi minute, I guess, at this point.
Exactly.
But it was City of Chi, 30 seconds. That's what we allot 30 seconds on this podcast.
For Serious Chi.
City of Chi. Okay. Then, again, that's the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at RTW Calcio and on Twitter at Rete This Way, R-E-T-E This Way, for, of course, just the, you know, what do we post, guys? Jokes, polls.
Yeah, you know.
Retweets. We post what the fans want.
That's what we post what the fans want. That should be on our bio. We post what you want. So yeah, make sure you're following us on those platforms, and yeah, if you ever have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. Again, that's it for the show. We will see you all at the after this international break, obviously, and in time for some fun today action next week. Okay, so with that, have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.